How Curious, sponsored by Oklahoma City Community Foundation.
People come to the Oklahoma City Community Foundation because they care about this community. They want a bright future for this region. And they come to the Oklahoma City Community Foundation because they know we can help make that happen.
Together, we can build a stronger, more supportive community for everyone. If you want to make a difference, join us. Your Oklahoma City Community Foundation will help you make it happen.
Hello, welcome to KGOU's How Curious. I'm Rachel Hopkin.
What would you do if I was coming in as a customer?
Well, then I just help you. I say, what would you like to buy? Would you like to buy appliances or what are you thinking?
I'm in a shop in the small western Oklahoma town of Clinton. It's called Kluver's Appliances and Home Furnishings. Owner Hoy Geswender is showing me around.
I love that sofa.
My eye had been caught by a vast sectional affair.
It's huge. Well,
it's for sales. and I will deliver to Norman.
All this is a far cry from the circumstances which brought Hoy and around 250 of her compatriots here over 50 years ago.
Saigon, April the 30th, 8 o'clock. The last American helicopter on the roof of the American embassy prepares to lift off the last of the evacuees fleeing before the advancing communist armies.
In 1975, North Vietnamese forces captured the Vietnamese capital and the country fell under communist rule. Many non-communist Vietnamese were now in great peril of imprisonment or much worse, and the situation caused an exodus of well over 100,000 people in that year alone.
I'm Randy Kluver. I'm currently the Associate Provost and Dean of Global Studies at Oklahoma State University.
But in 1975, Randy was just 11 years old and living at home in Clinton, where his family owned the furniture store. His parents, Mary and Ordell Kluver, followed international news keenly, and his mother in particular was moved by the events transpiring overseas.
And she said, why don't we adopt an orphan? This will be something we can do to help. And so as she got into it and she started to explore it, they said, that's not our issue. What our issue is actually pulling families out.
Vietnamese refugees were by now arriving en masse in the U.S. and were initially living in military camps. One was at Fort Chaffee in Arkansas. Mary learnt that in order to leave Fort Chaffee, each person or family had to have an American sponsor. The Kluvers were ready to take on this role and were also instrumental in persuading others in Clinton to do the same.
Then her attention turned about 15 miles to the west, where there's a decommissioned Air Force base called the Clinton Sherman Air Force Base out near Burns Flat. And that had been really decommissioned, I think, in the 1960s. And so there was just a bunch of empty housing there. And she said, wouldn't that be a great place to bring some of these Vietnamese? And, you know, you've got houses, you've got industries that need workers, you've got a lot of things there. And so that's where the project really became interesting, because now we're talking about a scale that was quite unimaginable.
The very first family that the Kluver sponsored was the Chun family, which consisted of two parents and 10 children, including Cam Lin. Cam Lin was 11 at the time, the same age as Randy, and certain events have clearly stuck in her mind.
On our way from Fort Chaffee to Mary Kluver's house, we stopped at a diner place. And I remember, because this is the first experience coming out off the camp and going really coming into, I would say, the U.S. And she ordered lunch for us. And I remember that they have this tiny salad bar. And so she goes, yeah, go up there and get your salad if you like. And after we ate and we were sitting there, and then Mrs. Kluver was like, do you want some more salad? Go and get more. But then my mom said, no, we don't want to, because, you know, it would cost her a lot of money, right? And then she goes, no, you can get it. All you can eat, all you can eat. And that was like the first time that we heard that expression, all you can eat. Really? I mean, you can just eat whatever you want. You can just keep eating. Oh my God. That was the coolest thing, I have to say, I learned.
Initially, the Chun family stayed in the Kluver's home, and there the surprises continued.
I look at the floor. That's the first thing that caught my eye. The floor was blue. It was carpeted. And there's swirl all the way up to the stairs. In Vietnam, we don't live on carpets. We'll live on tiles and mahogany wood. I was like, what kind of a floor is this? It was so beautiful. And even like walking up on the carpet was wow.
The next morning, it became clear that news of the arrival of the Chun family had spread.
Mrs. Kluver was making us pancakes and sausages, and the smell was wonderful. That's the first time we're having pancakes. She goes, look out the window. And we all like looking out the window, the kitchen window. And we saw all these people, all these young, like our age, you know, they were all standing out there in her front yard with bicycles, toys, balls, football, basketballs, even a horse. All the neighborhood kids were out there in her lawn waiting for us to come out and play with them.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it just, you know, I remember all these beautiful things about Oklahoma, but the one thing that stuck with me was the generosity. Like, you know, our first English lesson was with this sweet elderly woman, and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. She took us all to the supermarket, and she taught us all these, like, you know, like, oh, here's a broccoli, English, you know, carrots and things like that. And it was wonderful. I think the community just really will open their arms and welcoming us.
My name is Elgin Spurley, and I live here in Clinton, Oklahoma. And this is my wife, Bonnie Spurley.
And what do you remember of the Vietnamese resettlement here?
The very first thing I remember is when Mary Kluver came to us. I was assistant manager at the local Safeway store at that time. And Mary came in and was telling us about the Vietnamese people that she was sponsoring and that they had a different taste for foods, you know, that things we didn't carry out here. So she had a list of different things that she wanted us to order just special for them, which we did. And one of the things that I remembered that always stuck in my mind was a request for like 50-pound bags of rice and stuff. You know, nobody out here ate 50 pounds of rice, so we had to order all these special items for them. And we usually closed our store at 8 o'clock at night. And so we made an agreement with Mary that if she would bring the people in after we closed, that we would just let them have the store just for themselves to shop. So here she came in with, it seemed like 25 or 30 people with her. You know, she had several carloads. It was so interesting listening to them talking in their own language, you know, and we couldn't understand a thing they were saying. But the thing I remembered was how friendly and courteous they were. They was always, thank you for this, thank you for that. And it just really stuck in my mind how grateful they were to be here in a free country.
On one occasion, that thankfulness took a more tangible form.
So we were sitting at home one evening and the doorbell rang and I got up and went to the door. And here stood these two little Vietnamese ladies, you know, and they had their hands full of food. They had cooked all this food for us as a gratitude, you know, for what I thought what little we did for them, you know. But anyway, it was so impressive. They had this, I think, baked chicken and all the rice and all the trimmings.
That's so amazing. They just turned up with a meal and you were...
Yes.
And was it Vietnamese
just,
food?
Uh-huh, yes.
And what did you think of the food?
Oh, it was great. It was... The chicken was fabulous and all of the trimmings and
we
everything.
We didn't waste anything. We ate it
all. We ate every bit of it. It was so delicious.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Elgin believes that one of the women that night was the mother of Hoi Geswender, who we met at the top of this episode. Aside from cooking, her mother worked in a local factory sewing carpets for cars, whilst her father was based in a turkey processing plant. I asked Randy Kluver how the process of finding employment had worked.
My parents just built the relationships with those employers, did a lot of cajoling and saying, hey, we've got some people, can you employ them? Most of the employers were willing to give them a chance, but it was not always easy because a lot of the Vietnamese who came didn't speak English. And so how do you communicate with them? There's a great story in the book about the different work expectations that the the Vietnamese felt like, okay, well, I've done what you asked me to do, so I'm leaving now. And the employers are like, no, you're supposed to stay here for 8 hours. And they're like, but there's nothing to do. And so it doesn't matter. We expect you to stay here. The Vietnamese felt it was immoral to sit around when there wasn't something to do and to get paid when they weren't actually doing anything. But the employers expected them there for 8 hours. And so helping them to understand that became an issue.
The book that Randy just mentioned is one that he recently published based on his parents' contemporaneous writings. It's called Chow to Main Street, and I put details in the show notes and online. Just search for KGOU and How Curious. Although she was only 16, Hoi was also put to work. Initially, she was cutting potatoes for a local restaurant. Then she worked as a dishwasher for the nearby Veterans Center. And then the Kluvers decided to give her a job in their own furniture store. That's where she met their nephew, Kurt Geswender. From what Hoi said, it sounds like he took an instant shine to her. But this was a problem, because even as she and her family had been fleeing Vietnam, she'd promised her grandmother she would not marry an American. Fear of what might happen between Hoi and Kurt led the family to relocate to California, where many of their relatives had by now settled. But Kurt wasn't about to give up.
I got a phone call from Kurt saying, hey, my mom and dad and I are here in LAX, and so we want to know your address so we can come. And so I told my mom and dad, I said, he's here with his mom and dad. So it's okay. So they told my grandparents, and so everybody kind of ready. And so they walked in, they dressed up in suit and dress, and they have the humongous tray of gifts, and they have rings, and they have everything.
This is in line with Vietnamese tradition.
So Kurt, mom and dad, and Kurt, they stood in front of 42 people to ask permission for me to be married to Kurt. And the first thing my grandfather asked, I want to see your checkbook, I want to see your saving account, I want to see all you have, you know, so Kurt did. Then his father said, Kurt will make sure Hoi finished high school, no sexual intercourse whatsoever. Hoi will stay as a virgin and will stay with Marion Odell Kluver. And Marion Odell Kluver had a letter here saying that they will take care of Hoi until she finished, and Kurt will make sure she finished high school, will put her to college, and will get her car. Like, she will be very well taken care of, and Mr. and Mrs. Kluver will promise follow through, you know. So I moved home with him. I flew home with them, with Kurt, mom and dad, and I stayed with Mr. and Mrs. Kluver for 2.5 years.
That took her right up to her wedding. As it turned out, Hoi moved back to Western Oklahoma right around the time that most of the Vietnamese there were leaving. Many of them were from Saigon, a bustling urban metropolis, so the culture shock had been tremendous. A lot of them had also come from very comfortable living situations, grand homes, servants, and so on. But now things were different. Here's Randy Kluver again.
There was a tremendous amount of gratitude that they had been given that opportunity. But pretty soon the reality sets in. They're living at incredibly low standards of living. Their housing was adequate, but just adequate. And so it was hard. I think that's one of the reasons that it was just, most of them said, we just can't stay here. We've got to go someplace where it's a different climate. You know, it's cold and windy in the winter and so on.
250 or so Vietnamese came to live in Western Oklahoma in what has been described as one of the most successful group resettlement efforts in the U.S. But eventually, although the Kluvers had really wanted them to stay and build a permanent community there, nearly all of the Vietnamese moved away. This included the Chun family, although they had tried to make a go of a restaurant in Clinton. Many moved on to California, Texas, or Oklahoma City, where by now they had relatives living. In Oklahoma City, they helped form a large part of its thriving Asian district. But Hoi Geswender stayed with her husband Kurt in Clinton, where they took on the furniture store. Kurt died a few years ago from COVID, so now Hoi runs the store alone.
I like to keep this as a, you know, the tradition for the Kluver family, because I love them very much. They're the one that create me, and they how I form and how I am just absolutely the person I am in this town, and everywhere I went, people just love me.
And do you feel it's home?
Very much every day, even more so nowadays.
Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, I love Clinton so much. I will fight for Clinton. I will die here. I will do anything for Clinton, Oklahoma.
Thanks so much to Hoi and to all of the contributors to today's episode, plus Hong Kluver, Lin Nguyen, and Mr. Chun. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden. David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. Don't forget, if you have an idea for a future episode, we'd love to hear about it, so please get in touch at curious@kgou.org.
The fatal shooting of a teenager at a protest in Seattle has gone unsolved for 6 years.
This is open in your face. How are there no answers?
Our investigation has uncovered new evidence and witnesses who say they've never talked to police.
Did police ever call you?
Not once.
Listen to We Keep Us Safe, a new true crime series on the Embedded podcast from NPR.